Anyway, it wasn't, Bhutan wasn't shown, no?
Hello.
No, Bhutan was missing, but...
Yes, it was the other one.
As a matter of fact, that was the most important film, because that was a political statement which is still important until today. And it was the compilation film which the director compiled all kind of violent scenes and sex scenes, which were the majority of the Filipino film industry, of the Bhutong films. And that is a statement, he made a very critical statement and a very strong film about violence used in the society and violence also used in the media, both reflecting how violence is basically used in both. And anyway, and this is a statement which is still quite up to date. And the film,
yes, until
if you
now,
watch the film, and if you, you know, if you watch news, whatever, and if you watch the film, it could be could have been done today. So also, this program was a bit of a mix up. The first one was the Super 8 film, which was not And then also there were just a few films from the optical film workshop. Yes. Then there were also the film by Yamla Ranos, which was from the first workshop.
Yeah, the first workshop.
Yeah, and whatever. But let's. I don't think you find that film, right? But do you find it? No.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next life. Anyway, next life. Let's go to, because it's late and maybe someone has questions or comments or anything to say.
Okay, me.
We have some lucky ones and we can also talk at the bar, but I'd love to know about the people who make these works. I recognize some names, but other names are not so familiar to me. So could you tell us about, if not all of them, then some of them, the people who made the works in the program?
For example, the first one, but the first one was made by Cesar Hernando.
The first film,
Super 8.
Yeah, Cesar Hernando. I mean, you know Cesar Hernando much. You know the people much better than me.
I know him.
Mm. Cesar Hernando is very special because he is also a teacher, a professor
for
film production, and he's a collector of films and anything which has to deal with Filipino film history.
Yeah, he collects
posters, photographs, and he has his own personal archive, and this is actually quite Filipino style. There is a national film archive, but except talking, it's not much happening. And the most active people are this private collectors, but also, Teddy Coe, for example. Teddy Coe is.
And you can see Spencer, more political, no?
And there was a different kind of people, but these were most people who were in the Moral Fund in the workshops, but not only in my workshop, but in all the other workshops. These were people who had no chance, like, also to go to university, or you had a possibility to make films, had to get any kind of funding, and the only funding for this kind of filmmakers, and they were really very young, if you look at the photographs today, which you brought, that was the Moral Fund Film Institute, and basically the one which Uwe Schmelter sponsored, because he was lucky that at those days in the 80s, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs had really a lot of money compared for today. I said it yesterday that there was a major cut of 80% after the reunification, because the reunification in Germany became so expensive, so somewhere it had to be saved. So, but I mean, you could talk a lot about all this kind of people. They all had been individualists. That's why out in one workshop, 5 films supposed to be made, and then 15 films had been made, because everyone has his own idea. I don't know, does it answer your question?
I'm wondering about the lineup of the participants. I noticed there were no female filmmakers.
Yeah.
Yeah, in, but this among the participants or just among the acknowledged ones?
No, no.
Okay, I didn't see that.
There were.
Okay.
Maybe because of you. You were always there. I don't know. I didn't choose the participants. I was when I arrived. I never knew the people when I arrived. The people were there. I had no influence. I was just preparing the workshop, getting the equipment. You know, thinking what I do, and I had no idea what the participants
maybe the,
came for. I don't know. I don't think that Uwe Schmelter even had an influence on it. So it's usually the people who were in the Mowel Fund, who were working there in the Mowel Fund. But true, it's mostly boys there at that time. Later, I think it changed
later.
In the 90s.
Yeah,
no, it changed in the mid-90s, it changed a lot.
The women filmmakers came in.
Yeah, much more actually, much more in the 90s.
Yes. Just to add to that, very briefly, many of the names that you saw in the credits were actually also lenders of materials to the Misfits show. So I'd like to just thank them in absentia. On the question of like the gender makeup of the program, this you won't be surprised to hear also struck me quite obviously. I put this to Merv at one point. Merv was the curator of the program. And his response was pretty despondent. There are a number of women who show up in the photographs that we've recovered here in Berlin, indeed, who were sort of part of the scene. But he said, to his knowledge, for the 80s in particular, from this context of production, he wasn't aware of female authored films that could be included. So it may be simply a matter of them not having come to light. It may be a matter of them not existing. It may be a matter of them having deteriorated to the point where they've been discarded. But I'm not able to comment further.
But also, this is not a Filipino problem. It is also a German problem, a worldwide problem until today, that the representation of female in the film industry is very small. It's what have you, 5%, you know, and behind the camera, or maybe they can do wardrobe or makeup, but actors, but that's it. It didn't change so much until today. There are coming up discussions, but the percentage of female filmmakers is still very, very low.
Yeah, I'm just wondering because in the mainstream filmmaking scene by that time, there was Nikita Kashinabara and Marie Lydia Tabar. So I'm wondering if it's a function of that particular scene. But I understand.
Yeah, I once again, I had no influence. I couldn't tell them there should be, I wish I could, you know, 50% women and 50% men, something like that, but I had no influence on that. And as a matter of fact, I saw Uwe wouldn't interfere into this. I mean, he would, that was not his job, you know, to interfere in their affairs. So he left it to the Filipinos, do it your way. It's we help you, but organize it, and we do not decide who is going to be there or whatever. It's not, I don't think that's politically correct to do it. But it's good you raised this issue because it's still up to date and it hasn't changed much. There are more discussions going on about it, but except the discussions, there is not much happening, to my point of view. And to my clear observation. I'm still teaching film, I see what is happening, and it is always in the, women are still in the same position they had been for 100 years in the film industry.
In the workshop itself was a mix of filmmaking and watching films together.
Sit.
Workshop itself, how did you structure it? You watched films as well as made films during the workshop?
Yeah, Christopher Champens to to show to the workshop or something?
Well, actually, how I did it, I brought a lot of films. The Goethe Institute already had programs of experimental films, which Uwe Schmelter actually did when he was the head in Munich for the whole film department, and he. Actually, I've seen the potential in experiment, especially in experimental film, because he has a PhD in art history. So he, I think, he knew what he was doing. He knew, see, that there's a big potential for the arts, and he was the first one who put together programs of German experimental films and sent it around before he came to Manila. So. He was the one who really, as I said, many things depend on personalities. You know, I mean, there had been other people in Manila. I wonder why there was no experimental film workshop. So it depended on the personality, like in this case, like Uwe Schmelter, you know, who really pushed it and who has seen the potential in the Philippines for films, and especially that as the media, even he itself. Is also a musician, could have support theater or whatever, but he supported film, and that is quite interesting. And it's that's how it came together. And then when I was I was invited for the workshop, so I always expect the worst. So I was preparing for, you know, for the equipment. We, at that time, there was no email, no blah, blah, blah. So we sent faxes. Uwe sent me and faxes what is happening there. And I said, yeah, well, you know, we have cameras, but be careful. The cameras don't work. Okay, so I had brought in my own cameras. So I got three 16-millimeter cameras, put it together, tripods, lights, a lot of equipment, about 90 kilo of equipment. And then how do you get 90 kilo equipment to Manila? But Uwe Schmelter was quite smart. I was actually, the way he did it, fortunately, I didn't have to stay in a hotel. I could stay in his private house, which was a very nice house, which was much nicer than being in a hotel room. And then every Sunday he was playing skat with the head of the Lufthansa and the ambassador. So this is car, kind of, you know, what will card play. And that was very smart of him. So that's why he got 90 kilo with Lufthansa for free. And that's why he then how he got this kind of equipment with films. Could be any kind of films, you know, because I brought also other films and equipment through the custom. Ambassador helped, of course, with him who was playing skat every Sunday. So he had his way to manage also to get around all this kind of thing. So once again, it's not only to have the personality to push something, but also to have a way to do it and being smart enough, you know, to get around about different kind of restrictions. Maybe with the microphone.
Okay. Sorry, I think my question was partially answered just then. But yeah, I was wondering how much the participants did have exposure to, you know, experimental filmmakers outside of the Philippines or predecessors. And if that was a part of your workshop process.
They had been exposed already to some programs of experimental films, which were regularly shown at the cinema of the Goethe Institute. So like in Singapore, they have in Goethe Institute, I don't know if they have a seminar, but usually all over major cities, there is a Goethe Institute and they have their own cinemas. So they had some exposure to experimental films. It was quite good, but it was not really cosmopolitan from my point of view. It was, of course, and the emphasis was just on German experimental film. So at that time, there was no digital media, so I was collecting with friends and others on VHS tapes, all sorts of films, which I brought in by Kenneth Anger or by Bruce Conner, which are just compilation films, or even Tarkovsky. They didn't know, which is not really experimental film, but Tarkovsky was very important, and they never seen this kind. Or Bélatar, actually, who was very influential on Love Diaz. He was watching Bélatar again and again, you know, this long black and white films, 7 hours and so on. I think he was quite influenced by Bélatar. So I was bringing in all this kind of other films from, you know, which were not from Germany, but also from France. I brought the film from Man Ray, actually. Then I've seen films from, because they were not in the program, because of a French filmmaker, or Salvador Dali and other experimental filmmakers. But actually a lot of underground films from the Jack Smith, really wild stuff from 59, 60. He was the first gay filmmaker who really changed, he was the one who actually first one used the word underground film, that he was an underground filmmaker. Or Kenneth Anger, or Maya Deren, films like that. They never seen films by Maya Deren, but I had this, you know, on tapes, VHS tape. So I try to expose the students to, or the workshop participants, better to say, to as many different kind of films as possible in that short time, just to give them a bright, you know, inspiration, to have a lot of inspiration as possible.
It's a simple question. There's a Manila Information Agency was marked in the credits. And what kind of organization
is it? That's a good question, because that was something which made also, compared to other Southeast Asian countries, made this kind of workshops possible. Wouldn't be possible in other Southeast Asian countries, simply because they had a very good laboratory. And it was called the Philippines, Philippine Information Agency, which was actually set up by Francis Ford Coppola, because when they shot the film, not Platoon, it was also shot there, but Apocalypse Now, was for 1 year, they were shooting almost a year in the Philippines, and they didn't want to send it to the United States. They had to watch rushes. You know, in the old days, you had the negatives, so you have to print it, and then you have to watch rushes. So they came from Hollywood, built up this huge laboratory to high standards, and then actually a few years later, they were shooting Platoon, developing the film. I mean, processing negatives is the most crucial things. If something fails in the negative, I mean, one day shoot can cost $1 million, for example. No? I mean, with all the crew somewhere in the jungle, blah, 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 and so on. So that was very good, and this was Pia. Pia was very supportive, and because there was a wonderful woman, what was her name?
Bel Kapol.
Bel Kapol was fantastic. She really was very supportive, so she said, we do it, everything for free. And then actually it's a government institution, and usually they close at 6. So she was there, sometimes staying at night so that the students were able to enter the public, you know, the public office and work there at nights. And I never seen this kind of engagement. And Bel Kapol was really very nice, I must say. And so there was this laboratory, but it's not only the laboratory. There were a lot of people who were, Filipino people who really were, you know, supporting us very, very strongly. You know? Yeah. And this is a good example, for example. Number one, the infrastructure of having a good laboratory. I did 2 years later another workshop in Thailand. There was nothing.
There's no laboratory.
There was no industry. And we had to send all the films, the Goethe Institute has to send all the films to Manila to have it processed, to do the print work, to do the rushes, everything. And they did it. And then when they did it for free. Fantastic.
Fantastic. But now the PIA is closed, no?
Yeah, because the analog media is actually is almost dead. I mean,
nobody's processing the film anymore.
It's Hollywood. There are still 20% of the Hollywood films are made on negatives. Why? Whatever. Don't ask me. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That is PIA, Philippine Information Agency.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was a long day, and thank you for coming, in spite of the rain and in spite of a long day and a late night, a Saturday night. Thanks for coming. And
thank you.
I'd like to add a thank you to our technical team.
Yes.
Matthias.
Matthias.
And please put your hands together for Roxley and Christoph Unesco. Thank you very much.
Also for David T for bringing me here in Germany.
David, yeah.
And of course Daniel for helping me with the microphone. Thank you very much. God bless you.